Hello and welcome to episode 283. I did it again. I don't know where that quirk comes from. It's like every time I'm off for a week or two, like I come back and I can't pronounce the word episode and I fuck it up. But this is episode 283 of the internet's one and only podcast about comics books. Welcome to 2022. Happy New Year, everybody. I am your host, Jean-Luc. And I'm joined, as always, by Chad.
Because this is like the 9/11 of the comics book podcast. Wow, I fucked that joke up so hard.
How is this?
And I made fun of you for not being able to talk.
Wait, can we? Well, Emily's also here. Emily, say hello. And then we'll go back to unpacking what Chad meant.
Hello.
I'm drinking a Manhattan, and I wanted to be like, in the spirit of 9/11,
Yeah, is that something but you like celebrating,
I didn't have a whole
Chad?
Lot of fill in between the joke and the punchline, and I was like, oh, wing it, it's fine. And then I flew a plane right into that thing.
Well, we're kicking 2022 is off to a great start.
Yeah, I volunteered to edit this week as like a Christmas present to Jean-Luc, and because I want the episode to go up. And then all of a sudden, you guys give me work to do.
I'm sorry. But we are, convening at the beginning of the year, not to talk about comics, but to talk about the year that was 2021, and all the things that happened. We're not going to talk about all the things that happened in 2021. We're going to talk about a few of the things that happened in 2021. We're going to talk about some movies, some cinematic experiences, although I think I'm the only one with cinematic experiences. Everyone else had sitting on the couch experiences.
Yeah.
I went to the cinema a couple of times.
We're going to talk about some video games.
Luca was better than the Green Knight. Fight me.
That's just wrong. And we're gonna talk about some TV shows. Well, yeah, a few TV. I guess we're talking about TV shows. I think those are the... Oh, and music. Music is probably the category we'll spend the most time talking about. Alex is out this week. He's sick, so... We'll touch on some of the stuff that Alex liked. He put it in the Google Doc for us, so we can mention the things that he likes, but he's not here to tell us why he likes them, which is too bad. And then next week, we will be back with our annual Build a Top 10, where we, you know, figure out what our top 10 comics of the year were. So Comics Talk will come back next week and come back with force and vigor.
Will I get caught up on May's book by then? I hope so.
I hope so too, because it's gonna make a run, my friend.
It's a good book.
Exactly. It should probably be in the top 10. I don't know. We'll talk about that next week. I need to read the last issue of Porcelain, actually, while we're on the subject.
I still gotta do that too.
You need to get caught up on Catwoman.
Bat.
We're what, 4 minutes in? 4 minutes in. I Jesus.
Okay, so to be fair, that is not the name. That is not. There's no Catman Batwoman comic, but those are technically both existing DC characters.
Wait, really? So,
yeah. Yeah, Catman and Batwoman?
You
yeah,
think those Catman's penis is barbed like a real cat's?
They've never shown it to me, so it's hard to
Cowards.
Say.
Cowards at DC.
I thought Catman was something that they made up for the Fairly Odd Parents.
No,
also,
Catman.
Yeah, Adam West played him.
Yeah, Catman was, I believe, came out of the 60s in like the weird campy era, and then was gone for about 50 years until Gail Simone put him on her Secret Six roster in the early
2000s. 2006.
2006. There you
Bam.
Go. I didn't know that off the
I'm
top of my head.
At his
That's
Wikipedia
impressive.
Page.
Oh, okay. And then he has been sporadically appeared since then. There's a New 52 Secret Six run as well. He was bisexual in that one, although I don't think it ever came up in comic. I remember the controversy about this because I think Gail Simone tweeted that he was bisexual, but then it never actually appeared in any of the comics. Like, he didn't say, like, anyway. My brain has too much information about New 52 era DC controversies.
You did this to yourself.
I wish I could like go in there with an ice cream scooper and extract all of them.
Yes.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind out your
oh my God,
New 52
yes.
knowledge.
Yeah, absolutely. That way, when I was reading the three issues of DC versus Vampires, I wouldn't have immediately known who Andrew was. I could have like lived in bliss of not.
Oh, I was supposed to read that.
Having to rip,
okay, but DC
again.
Versus Vampires rules. So
yeah, it's good. It's just like when he shows up at the beginning, it's like ripping the Band-Aid of iVampire getting canceled off all over again. So you know. Although that means nothing to the two of you. You want to talk about some films?
I like that Chad only has one film.
I do enjoy that Chad like has actually seen more than one movie this year, but only felt like it was worth it to talk about one of them.
Yeah.
Is that true, or did you just get lazy and not put other ones on
the
list?
No, I did a full top five because I wanted to see if I saw enough to fill out a top five, and I did. But most of the movies are not worth talking about other than Pig, which is great.
Yeah, Pig is an amazing film. Do you want to... I mean, I'll talk about it when I do my list, but do you want to touch a little bit on like why you liked Pig, what you liked about it?
It's just, for one thing, it's really nice to see like Nicolas Cage in a movie that reminds you that like he's a really good actor and not just because he can be crazy at the drop of a hat.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a beautifully shot, moving story about like dealing with grief and loss. And it has like kind of just enough lore to it and twists and turns that the chef thing works really well. He gets punched in the face by a dude. He gets hit in the head a couple times, actually. I love that he never changes his clothes or washes his face. And so he's just got dried blood on his head like the entire fucking movie.
Yeah, basically up until the last scene, his head is just caked with blood.
Like the last scene is like gorgeous. Like it's such a small scope character piece that's really pretty, and there's only like a handful of people to the entire cast, but they all do a great job, and they just the way they're interwoven in each other's lives is really beautiful. It's one of those things where it's kind of like an art house movie, but it not so art housey that it scares you, which is where I think the Green Knight, like I like the Green Knight a lot, but it has that element to it where like I kind of get why people didn't let jive with this. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think Peg is just like top to bottom fantastic.
No, I am right there with you. It is actually has maintained as my number one movie of the year, despite having some in the last like couple months, especially having some stiff competition thrown at it. I don't know if you had this experience with it, but part of what made it work so well for me is that I kept waiting for there to be a twist and for him to like, I don't know, like pull out a shotgun and start killing people. Just because like it is set up as such a it has like the setup of a classic like revenge film where
yeah,
his truffle pig is stolen from him. He is like beaten up and badly injured at the beginning of the movie. And the movie is about him, you know, leaving his spot, the place that he's made a home for himself in the wilderness, and going back to the big city to find his pig. And I kept like, just because like of the way that one of the trailers I saw had framed it, and knowing like the direction that Nicolas Cage's career has gone in the last few years with things like Colorado Space and Mandy, I just kept waiting for that other shoe to drop and for it to just become like a bloodbath.
Sure.
And I had just had that expectation the whole time. And so when the movie actually ends up being something not a story about revenge, but about reconciliation, was just like, that was like such a twist for me just because of what my expectations were going in. I don't know if those were like reasonable expectations to have, but that just made it feel really special when he cooks dinner for the family at the end. And they have that moment around the table. It just feels, I don't know, like it just really moved me. And like you said, everything about the connections he has to those characters is really beautiful.
I agree. I think for the first like 60% of the movie, I was waiting for him to go find a shotgun. And then after that 60% mark, I was like, okay, he's clearly not doing this in this movie. And if he does, I'm actually going to be mad now because it's set up, you know, it's built itself to a very different story than Nicolas Cage goes on revenge. And yeah, like the twist is that it's not about revenge, it's about reconciliation. And I think that's what it's just really well executed, and it's such a clever, it's almost a really clever casting of Nicolas Cage, right?
And
putting him in that makeup, in that scenery, because you have this expectation going in because it's him, And then he's like, yeah, but I was also in this movie called Joe, and I'm like, an Oscar-nominated, actor, too. Like, I can do this shit really well. And you're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's really exciting to see him in a role like this one, I think, for that exact reason, because he's an actor who now is typecast because of Face Off and Ghost Rider and The Wicker Man. But he can be a very serious, dramatic actor, too, and his performance here is really, really understated, and it's just a really fantastic film all around, and just beautiful to look at as well. So love this movie. But I can do the rest of my list really quickly, and then we can,
seems like a nice way to segue.
Yeah, since Chad has nothing else to talk about, and we can then pass it off to Emily. But yeah, my list, I guess, in order, since I gave away my number one already, I guess I'll go 1 to 5. So my number two movie is Matrix Resurrections,
which I just finished watching right before we started recording.
Yeah, and didn't add it to your end of the year list. So
look,
I had
a very difficult time with my list of movies, because there were a lot of movies that I felt were like kind of on the exact same level for me, and so it was hard to put them in order. I didn't want to bother trying to figure out where I wanted to slot Matrix Resurrections into this list, but I liked it.
Good. That's good. I'm going to avoid spoilers on this one, just because I know Chad still wants to see it. And it's,
I saw
also
the first one today.
Nice. Yeah? That's progress.
It's also still
fresh enough, I think, for some people that may not have gotten the chance to go out to see it yet. But I really, really loved it. I think it's the best of the Matrix sequels. And despite my initial skepticism about revisiting the Matrix, 10 or 15 years down the line, and losing some important cast members. I had a funny moment where I thought Hugo Weaving passed away like 3 or 4 years ago, until last night when Emily informed me that Hugo Weaving was actually still alive. But it loses, Hugo Weaving and
he was supposed to be in this, but there was like a big scheduling conflict.
Yeah. Yeah. And it actually, I think it works out really well how they handle that. And then also losing Lawrence Fishburne as Morpheus. But I thought that it was a really, really clever adaptation of the literal Matrix of like what the Matrix is into a modern context. And sort of the reframing of certain characters and their relationships to one another, I thought was done really, really well. I will say, on the whole, I don't think it's as good of an action movie as the original trilogy, or as any of the original trilogy. But what it does do that the first two sequels don't is actually make good on a lot of the themes of the original Matrix, which, for as much as I do love the sequels, I think they kind of drop the ball in that regard. And just especially like the relationship between Neo and Trinity just was so well written and so well developed in this movie. And I won't get into specifics, of course, but just the way that all of that is, that their relationship is handled, and that Agent Smith is reimagined, and that Morpheus is reimagined for new actors. Like, those are really, really cool. They did a really, really good job, like, adapting it to a more contemporary context. And it just, everything about it, like I said, aside from the action sequences, to be honest, and even those, like, there are some good ones, but they're not all as consistently good as I would have hoped. But everything else just really landed for me. Just good stuff all around. It's, like, corny in the exact way that, like, those original movies are. It doesn't take itself too seriously, which, with the pedigree that it has. But, I mean, also, like, I don't think the Wachowski sisters, although this one is just Lana, not Lily's not involved, I
think. Lily was working on a Showtime project.
Right. But it's not like they have taken themselves more seriously since the success of The Matrix. If anything, they've taken themselves progressively less seriously.
Yes.
Over time. But this walks the line in the way that I think the original trilogy and the original movie does tonally. It's just really, really good stuff. I'm excited for Chad to get to watch it. I'm glad.
Me too.
You finally got to watch it, Emily. It's good stuff.
I'll watch Jonathan Groff in anything, and I felt like he was expertly employed in this film. When he came on screen, I was like, yeah, that's my boy. And Quinn and my roommate Zane were like, who is this?
I had no idea who he was. I had to
explain.
Yeah. My sister was also had to explain to me that he's from Glee.
He is from Glee, okay. Yes. He was also from Hamilton. He's done some other stuff too.
I assume Glee is what you were getting at.
It's both, but like, okay. I'm also just like, I'm a fan of, I just find him a fun and charismatic actor.
Absolutely.
Neil Patrick, I was worried about Neil Patrick Harris in this movie, but honestly, like,
Neil Patrick Harris is in it.
Yeah. And
awesome.
This was
his really performance is brilliant.
Like, this was really a true return to like the, I was fucking obsessed with Dr. Horrible's sing along blog when I was in high school. And like, he is really channeling some of that like villain energy in a way that is so good and so fun in this, it was so good.
It's great, yeah. He's great in this.
Very much enjoyed this movie. This is not a movie that I feel like needed to exist, but for something that didn't need to exist, it sure had a hell of a fun time doing it.
The thing is, it's one of those movies where, and I don't want to go too much longer on it, but it's one of those movies that I was like, oh yeah, this probably doesn't need to exist, and then I watched it, and I'm like, oh, this absolutely needed to exist. That was kind of my, arc with it. My number three movie this year was the Card Counter, which is the new movie from Paul Schrader, who directed my favorite movie from a couple years ago, First Reformed. It stars Oscar Isaac, which is, you know, already a point in its favor. But it's a movie about a gambler who sort of, you know, exists like sort of below, under the radar, lives a life sort of not entirely off the grid, but sort of off the grid, and I was like, okay, that sounds interesting, I suppose. I was always gonna watch it because it was a Paul Schrader movie, and then half an hour into it, it has this twist where it turns out that it's also an Iraq War movie, and the character played by Oscar Isaac served in Iraq, and specifically at the Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. And it is about him I don't know that processing his trauma from that is the right word, but is the right phrase, but feeling like a deep sense of regret and sorrow about the awful things that he was party to, in Iraq, and specifically as a torturer in that prison. And Oscar Isaac delivers this like really, really haunting performance of somebody who has like is totally scarred and traumatized by those events. And also you just constantly get this sense that like he knows there's like nothing that he can do to really repent for them. And so he's sort of fallen into this life where he just lives totally aimlessly, knowing that he's partaken in these really horrible actions and wants to reconcile with that, but has no idea how to do that. And it's just a really, really intense and I thought like pretty deep character study of somebody in that role, and not the kind of movie that you get, especially about American soldiers, very frequently, especially out of an American director and an American movie. But it does, I think, actually walk the line really, really well there between, like, it's not a movie about how, like, oh my God, American soldiers were so traumatized by the Iraq War. It doesn't, you know, quite get into that side of things, which is good because I hate shit like that. but does, you know, is actually a good character study of somebody who participated in that. And then it's also a very funny movie at times. It's got a really mean, dark comic streak to it that I really, really appreciated. So all in all, loved it. My number four movie, and this is one that also, I really did not expect this to hang on for so long in my top five, but has just made it all the way through the year, and that's Old. Which I've already talked about in a fair amount of depth when I saw it for the first time a few months ago. But this really felt like a return to form for M. Night Shyamalan after the conclusion of the Unbreakable trilogy, which I didn't particularly care for with Split and Glass. But I really love this movie. I thought that it is, like, obviously a very goofy premise based on a short story.
It's based on a graphic novel.
Graphic novel, yeah. My bad. Thank you. That he actually turns into a really potent meditation on mortality and people accepting their own mortality and just the ways that it does that from a movie that, like, I mean, like, thematically, it's a movie that's closer to, probably to Midsommar than anything else that I've seen in recent years, but is also, like, a Hollywood, not blockbuster, but this is a movie that, like, was a big budget, like, headlining movie at AMCs and shit like that. It's not the kind of thing you would expect to see necessarily from mainstream American filmmaking. And I love it for that, and I love what M. Night does with those themes. And also, like, it is just one of the most, like, grotesque horror movie. It's just an incredibly grotesque horror movie in all the best ways. The body horror here is just fantastic. Like, as the characters, like, rapidly age, but don't actually, you know, get the time to get used to their new bodies, just, like, the consequences of that are really, really great, and the way that he handles that is fantastic. So some good body horror shit, good thematic shit, some good writing. I liked it a lot. And the last movie in my top five, this is a late entry. I watched this movie, like, I don't know, 36 hours ago.
John, you want to tell me what this movie's about? I'm going to let you know. I already know what this movie's about.
Yeah, so Titan is also a body horror movie by a French director named Julia Ducournau, who directed Raw, which was a French cannibal movie that came out in 2016. Fucking loved. That movie owns.
I've not seen it.
This is a movie about getting impregnated by your car, which is, I mean, that's obviously a reductive.
Reminds me of a lot of pictures I've seen, but they involve dragons.
Well, fair enough. Yeah, this is a movie, like, it is reductive to say this is a movie about getting impregnated by your car, but a lot of the plot is, you know, the main character gets impregnated by her car, and the things that follow are all consequences of that. Although, like, it starts off as, like, a serial killer movie from the perspective of the serial killer, which is great. There's some really good, like, horror action scenes at the beginning of the movie. There's some really good, like, slasher kills. The things that she does to some of the people are just fucking awesome to watch unfold on a screen. But then it takes this turn where it becomes a much more sensitive, a much softer movie, as the protagonist sort of flees her old life and impersonates somebody who has been missing since they were a child, and sort of inserts herself into the father's life, like taking the role of his lost son. And the way that plays out, it sounds silly. Like, it sounds almost like, you know, sort of like Weekend at Bernie's kind of shenanigans, but it's very much the opposite. Like, it's just about, you know, the nature of loving somebody and how that is can be messy and complicated, and but you know, a very, you know, human thing in the way that, you know, these characters are processing everything that's happened to them. And then she gives birth to her car's child at the end, and it's spoiler it rocks
alert. Does she name it Bumblebee?
Well, she doesn't, you know, unsurprisingly, she doesn't survive birthing the son of a car, or the daughter of a car, I suppose, that you never actually see what the baby looks like. But it's good stuff. I liked it a lot. It also has, like, a sort of, like, mean-spirited humor streak.
Okay, that's fucked up. What? That you don't get to see the baby. She's pregnant the whole movie.
Yeah.
And you're basically not getting the money shot.
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of money shots in this movie, let me tell you that.
That's still bullshit. That's not a top five movie. It's like watching a porn and you don't get the climax. Allegedly, I don't watch porn. I'm a very upstanding, chaste individual.
Yeah, if we've learned
church
anything,
on Sundays.
Who watches anything in your
but who
on this
watches
podcast?
I don't know anything about dragons fucking cars.
Who watches porn for the cum shot though? That's like the worst part of the video.
But it lets you know it's over.
Yeah, but like, how are you making it that far? I mean, I don't know. I can't make it. That
I feel like
far,
we're. Really. I feel like we're getting way too into this conversation.
Yeah, we can reel it back a little bit. But anyway, those were my top five movies of the year. Emily, do you want to talk about some of yours? Do you want to pick five from your list of 13 that you put in the Google Doc?
No, I did not put a list of 13. Hold on.
It's 10. It is
10.
I was exaggerating.
I specifically made sure it was 10. No, I only intended to talk about five of them. I just wanted to, like, mention the other five. Like, I wasn't going to go into any sort of detail. My number one movie of this year is The Mitchells vs. the Machines. Is an animated movie from Sony Pictures that debuted on Netflix, and I liked it quite a bit. It's about a teenage girl going off to college, and she has like a fight with her dad the night before she's supposed to leave, and he wants to like fix things, so he cancels her flight to go to her school and decides that they're gonna do a cross-country road trip to get from where they live in the Midwest to the college that she's going to, and hijinks ensue. Robots try to take over the world, you know, classic road trip movie stuff. It was a very fun movie. It did a lot of really cool things with the animation, kind of, you know, taking some pages out of Spider-Verse's book, in like pushing, sort of the boundaries of what people can do visually with like 3D animation, and like stylization and stuff, and very fun, and it was not a difficult choice to put it at the top of my list. Next was Fear Street, 1666. We've talked about the Fear Street.
Still haven't seen it.
We've talked about the Fear Street movies on this podcast before. John, you should watch it. The Fear Street movies only get better with each iteration, and I just like. I don't know, Fear Street 1666 was really good, and I didn't expect the Fear Street movies to be as good as they were. Next is Green Knight. We've also talked a lot about Green Knight, because we've all seen Green Knight now, I think. I mean, you know, it just fucking slaps, what can I say? Encanto, I actually moved up on my list right as we were starting the show, because I was not as hot on it, like, just coming out of the movie, but then it has just stuck with me in the 2 weeks since I watched it, and I've been, like, listening to the soundtrack constantly. I watched the movie again the other night, just, like, because it's on Disney Plus now, and I'm probably gonna watch it again with some friends tomorrow. I just think it's really cute and fun, and the music is really good. Dune is my next pick. Loved Dune. Still need to finish the book, Dune. I got sidetracked reading other books, but just like the, I don't know, like, I don't know why I became so enraptured with Dune. Like, by all accounts, I should not have, but I just, like, I can't. Kind of can't stop thinking about it and still haven't been able to. I'm looking forward to finishing the book. I'm looking forward to when they come out with the second part of the movie, because Dune is only part one of two, which I think was a good idea, because Dune is quite a dense book. It doesn't really make sense to try to cram it all into one movie, even though they did already try that. And then the rest of my list was Luca, My Little Pony the Movie, Malignant, Fear Street 1994, and Venom, Let There Be Carnage.
Venom! Let's go!
Honorary mention for Matrix, because I didn't know where to put it.
That's fair. Before we move on, I'm going to just mention the movies Alex put in here. Alex was one of... He also... something about top five just cannot get through these people's skulls. But he had Luca, The Green Knight, Spider-Man Far From Home, No Time to Die, Shang-Chi, Last Night in Soho, and then he wrote Space Jam, I Guess. And I think the I Guess is mostly he saw it this year, and it was probably the only movie he saw this year that he didn't put on the list, and so just, you know, felt obligated to include it.
Yeah, he had a top seven.
You know, big L for Alex, plus ratio for putting two MCU movies on his end of the year list. That's... you hate to see that.
Putting two comic book movies on the list for the comics podcast.
Yeah, that's what we like to call cringe around here. But let's move on to some music, just because that's what we've got up next. Emily, do you want to reverse order this bitch and tell us about your five favorite albums of the year? Although you didn't even... the last one says honorable mention.
Yes.
I retract my statement.
Discipline. My number one album was, of course, Church's Screen Violence.
Let's go.
Screen Violence made all of our lists, and with good reason, because it fucking slaps. We've all talked it to death, I think, on this podcast, because we all love it. Another thing I've also talked to death is my next pick, Olivia Rodrigo Sour. Willow's Lately I Feel Everything was really fucking good, and the reason I put The Anxiety on as honorable mention is because it is another Willow project, and I felt like she shouldn't get two spots on my top five. But I did really like that album also. My next pick was Starcrossed, Kacey Musgraves. Did not anticipate putting a Kacey Musgraves album on my list for this year, but my sister recommended it to me, and I listened to it, and then I ended up listening to it like five more times. It's Kacey Musgraves' divorce album, and it's got some good bops. It's much more of a pop album than historically Kacey Musgraves is more of like a country pop singer, so I guess she's sort of taking a Taylor Swift direction. And then my last album was Girl in Red's If I Could Make It Go Quiet. This is a band that comes up on my my radio station in my car. I listen to the Alt Nation station from Sirius XM Radio, and I kept hearing songs from this band, so I decided to look it up, and I really liked this album.
Sorry for laughing, it's just that my sister refers to Girl in Red as the way that you can tell if a girl is a lesbian.
I cannot believe I got called out by your sister.
So I thought it was very funny that it...
She's not wrong, is the thing.
Yeah, I'm. I just felt like that was a fun anecdote. Chad, what were your albums?
I want to say before, like, 2021 was such a weird year for music that I've listened to three of Emily's top five, and I like three of them. Like, Churches obviously is on my list. It's number five. But like Olivia Rodrigo's album and Willow's album were both pretty fun. Willow's I enjoyed a bit more, but like they're like in the same genre, but the soundscape is different enough where you're like, oh yeah, here's like two really non-competing things despite kind of, you know, going together. Mm-hmm. It was a good year for pop punk, if you like pop punk, which is kind of cool. So yeah, Churches, Screen Violence is my number five. But number four is Arcspire, Bleed the Future. The really speedy boys, the tech death. Then Halsey, If I Can't Have Love, I Want Power is my number three. Halsey's great. My number two is Mental Cruelty, A Hill to Die Upon, which is like some of the most disgusting deathcore that's probably come out in a while. Like, it is just big and stupid and noisy and stupid. I don't even know why I like some of that shit. I can't really put into words what I get out of that, because all the songs basically sound the same. And, it has like two different modes it's operating on. Kind of atmospheric, and they're just really noisy. And it just goes in between the two. but it's great. It's so good. And my number one was the new Whitechapel album, Ken. Kind of less deathcore, a bit more like melodic death metal. That band is definitely trying new things and working really well. They wrote some fantastic songs in that. It's a really, really good album.
Yeah, both of those last two, the Mental Cruelty album and the Whitechapel album, were things you put me onto. And they haven't like been like on repeat for me, but I really appreciate it. I do think that Mental Cruelty album is really fucking cool.
I've been trying to do his lows. Like one of the things I like about that is like that vocalist is a fucking monster. I'm like, I want to learn how to sound like him all the time, please. And so that's been sort of like the new person to strive for. It's been fun to like listen to that and then try to like match him.
Yeah, that's awesome. I will look forward to hearing that in the new year. Yeah, my albums, my number five is a bit of a last minute entry. I guess last minute, not in the sense that like I only started listening to it recently, but that it only clicked for me recently, which is Injury Reserves by the Time I Get to Phoenix, a band that I discovered through the 100 Gex remix album, which has become very on brand for me. But this album is really, really good. Like I said, it took a while for it to really click for me, even though it is very much like in the sort of niche, the hip hop niche that I really like. Like it's definitely like playing in the same areas like Death Grips and Clipping and to a lesser extent like JPEG Mafia, stuff like that. So it's sonically something that I'm really into it. I think the thing though is that like lyrically, like there are just a good number of songs in the back half of the album that just like really clicked for me. Things like Top Picks for You, which is a song about knowing someone who passes away and only like remembering them through their YouTube algorithm, which continues after they die. And it also is given sort of like an extra layer because the MC for the group passed away this year as well, right before the album came out.
Yeah,
but there's just some really good shit on there. I think like it's really obviously it's a shame that he passed away for a lot of reasons, but one of those is that this really feels like this is like a really fantastic album and could have been like a high watermark and a sign of like even better things to come in the future. So it's sad we won't get to see those, but they left behind at what I think is truly like very close to a masterpiece. I think By the Time I Get to Phoenix is something that will be, you know, sort of remembered for a long time. Just the way it pushes like this sort of subgenre of hip hop is really exciting. So love that album a lot. My number four is, you know, surprising nobody, the new Black Dresses album, Forever in Your Heart. Which is not something I expected to see. They broke up at the end of 2020, or maybe it was 2019, largely because of a lot of like harassment they were getting on the internet. But they reunited to put this album out, which was a really nice surprise in January. And it was also just like I thought a really cool evolution of their sound, moving not entirely away from like the synths and the sampling of their old albums, but definitely putting more of a focus on like the guitars, especially. It's much more, there's like some songs on here that like they've always had metal influences, but there's some songs on here that are like, oh, that's just like a metal track. That's fucking cool. Just like 45 minutes of rage. It's good. I like this album a lot. My number three was the latest album from Idols, Crawler. This is their fourth album. In part, I don't know, like this album, I think hit for me. I know that there've been a lot of reviews of this that have been a little more lukewarm on it. But this album came out like a week after I saw them, and Idols was my first show, post pandemic is not true, accurate, but you know, my first show since the beginning of the pandemic. And so they played a lot of the songs off of it at that show. And then hearing the album like a week later was just, you know, a really cool experience. It's it's the first time they've really branched out in terms of their sound. Their first three albums, well, as much as I like all of them, are sort of just evolutions of their sort of like art punk sound. And this has some of those songs, like stuff like The Wheel is still like has the big punk choruses and stuff like that. But it also leans more into like the sort of post-punk, like almost like new wavy genre, like with songs like Crash and the Beachland Ballroom going way more like in that direction, which is, you know, really, really cool. My number two, is screen violence. We've talked some to death, but for me especially, it felt like a really like a return to form for Churches. I did not like their last album. So for this album to come out and just really blow me away, the most a Churches album has ever blown me away since the first one, was really exciting. And those songs are great live too. I'm glad I went to see them. And then my number one, unsurprisingly to anybody who listened to the episode where we talked about it, is Lingua Ignota's Sinner Get Ready, which is, you know, as I discovered, making everybody else listen to it. Not for everyone, but that's totally fair. To be fair, I did not like expect people to love this album. But I do recommend people check it out. I mean, just because it's probably not like anything else you will hear. She has a fucking, she has a really great, powerful voice, and that just has so much emotion to it. Like, you feel like anguish and rage at, like, you know, her past abuse and like her sort of falling out with religion and with God, and just all of that is like there are moments on this album that almost feel too personal, but it's just like that is a big part of the appeal. It's just like a super personal, honest album where you just like feel the emotions along with Chris and Hader. It's so fucking good. And also, like, similarly to some of the other albums, like a bit of a step in a new direction, like away from the industrial sound of her previous two albums, and into something, you know, a little bit more melodic. But it's all good shit. Love this album a lot.
Okay, perfect. That Lingua Ignota album, I remember listening to that, and that's a trip. I do. It's one of those things where I clearly did not like it as much as you did, but I also do recommend people check it out just because, like, from an artistic standpoint, it's extremely interesting. It is extremely not like what you're probably going to hear in any normal soundscape, and so there's an art house aspect to it that I think is worth experiencing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I feel the same way about it. That, like, even if you're not gonna like it in the way that I like it or respond to it, it is definitely something that is worth hearing at least once. I also want to mention, I'm just gonna quickly mention the albums that Alex listed here. He made up for writing too many movies by, you know, only doing three albums, which are We Are by Jean-Baptiste, Trouble by Nico and Vins, and of course, Screen Violence. So
those how are, do you those... how do you know someone didn't listen to my EP with them not saying they didn't listen to my EP?
Damn, that's, I didn't even think about it from that perspective. That's brutal. Why you gotta do him like that, Alex?
Before we leave music, I wanted to tell you, John-Luke, that I do have a Hunter Gek song that I like now.
Is it the One Step Closer remix?
Is that the one with the Fall Out Boy guy?
Oh, no.
I couldn't remember which one that was. No, it's actually the Christmas song, Sympathy for the Grinch.
Oh, Sympathy for the Grinch rules. I love that song.
Gwen had me listen to it, and I was like, okay, actually, this is very fun.
Yeah, no, Sympathy for the Grinch is a blast. I love that album.
It's basically a hyper-pop ska song, so...
Yeah. But
I was extremely into it.
Like, Stupid Horse is also a 100 Gex ska song. So,
I haven't listened to all of 100 Gex. It's just, like, I don't listen to them because a lot of their songs sound like how anxiety feels. And that's not the vibe that I usually want for my music.
No, that is totally fair. All right, well, we are going to enter the game section where we'll say goodbye to Chad, who simply wrote LOL in the Google Doc.
If we would like, I actually, I only played four games this year, but I did ask Gwen, because my wife plays more games than I do. I have, Gwen has a top five,
yeah, go for
video
it.
Games. I don't have any explanations for them, so I just have, like, the titles, but their top five was Solar Ash, Sable.
Sable's really good.
That's what I've heard. Guilty Gear Strive. Metroid Dread, and Record of Lodoss War, Deedlit in Wonder Labyrinth.
Oh.
So, yeah.
I always forget that Gwyn is unfortunately a fighting game person.
Oh, extremely. So very much.
Since we're just reading people's lists off, I'll just lead with Alex's here. Mm-hmm. Alex also only included four games. I guess he didn't play five.
No, there's five here.
No, there's four. Halo Infinite, Deathloop, new Pokemon Snap and the Switch release of Apex Legends.
I see that you didn't mention that he wrote Genshin Impact here.
Yeah, because A, that's not a 2021 game, and also it's fucking horrible.
See, I thought you would object to the Apex Legends on Switch.
Well, it's a horrible port, but it's a horrible port of a good game. Like, it's not a bad game in the way that Genshin Impact. Like Apex players, look, the Apex community can suck in a lot of ways, but I don't think that Apex players need to be lined up with their face to a wall and shot in the back of the head like I think about Genshin Impact players. So, you know.
I don't even know what Genshin Impact looks like. I don't think I've ever heard of this game.
It's like a mobile game. It kind of looks like Breath of the Wild, honestly.
Yeah, it's a mobile anime game with the most predatory gacha mechanics you've ever seen.
Oh my god, I think I've seen the first level of this in VR chat.
that wouldn't surprise me.
It is absurdly popular.
Yeah, it's insanely popular, and I don't like bandying about the word degenerate, but, you know, in some cases it's warranted. I guess I can do my top five now that you know all the Genshin Impact players are calling me slurs in the DMs. My top five for the year. My number five. Well, it's interesting because this year I didn't play that many games, but the games that I did play were games that I played for 100 hours. Or 50 is probably more accurate, but I played a lot of these games for a really long time, with the exception of Unpacking, which is my number five game, which is a really cute and cozy 2 or 3 hour game where you just, the title is pretty self-explanatory. It's got this really cute low res art style, and it's just about the story of this woman moving to new places, and you get to unpack all her boxes. So it starts off in her childhood bedroom of unpacking boxes, and then goes through college, her college dorm, and then moving out and into her own apartment, and then eventually into her own house and having getting married and having kids and all that just unfolds with basically there's zero dialogue in the game, but it has a really great sense of environmental storytelling of you can really get a sense for the character. You pick up on things she's an artist, and at one point, she has a book that gets published, and you know this because there's three boxes full of comp copies that you have to shove into drawers and get out of sight. But it's just this. It's a really nice little game that I would highly recommend to pretty much anyone. It's on Switch. It's also on Game Pass. So really, really fun way to spend a couple hours. My number four is Pokemon Brilliant Diamond.
My number four.
Yeah, I have gripes with this game. It is extremely, it's Pokemon Diamond. Better in some ways and worse in others. But I do think, I have to give it credit for being the first Pokemon game where I've ever, maxed completed the Pokedex and actually spent the 130 or 150 hours that it takes to fucking do that. And I do I will say that as much as I dislike the art style and some of the decisions that they made, in terms of rebooting it, I do really like the changes they made to the underground system. Even though Sword and Shield already did this, I am just such a sucker for walking around, an environment and getting to see all the Pokemon just walking around with you. That is oh my god, Pokemon games do that now. That's so fucking cool. and it makes me extremely stoked for Arceus at the end of this month, but. I did really have a fun time with Brilliant Diamond. It is a game that just had its fucking grip on me for the last 2 months. And only after I finally, after literally spending, 12 fucking hours finding a Phoebus to catch and making it love itself to evolve into Milotic, was finally okay,
I can. Oh, is that what we're calling making love to yourself now?
I couldn't last 12 hours. My number three game was Valheim.
I've heard good stuff about this.
Yeah, Valheim rocks. It's like a Viking themed survival horror game, co-op survival horror game. And so at the beginning of this year, I think maybe not the beginning, it might have been more April, May, This is the game that, like, my friends and I just got hardcore into this game, and there were, like, consistently, like, between 3 and 7 of us on our server at any given time, you know, just doing shit. And the nice thing about these games, this game, is that, like, it has objectives. Like, there are boss fights, and we did, you know, complete all the boss, the quest progression and the boss fights. But the thing that, like, really had this game get its, that really got its hooks into me with this game was that, like, it's kind of just like a chat room where my friends and I were just, like, hanging out in Discord, and, you know, we were all sort of doing different things. I did a lot of role playing in this game, in kind of a bad way.
You suddenly got Chad's interest.
Yeah. So we got wiped early on by NPCs, like, attacking our, like, really shitty fort. And they, like, wiped us all, destroyed all our resources. And that was the moment where I decided I was never letting that happen to us again. And so I became obsessed with securitization and making sure that we were keeping the, you know, uncivilized natives out of our out of our homes. And I just basically for almost the entire time that we played that game, like, after the first 10 hours, everyone else was, like, off doing shit, and I was like, I'm building the Dread Fort, and ended up making this, like, massive elevated structure with one entrance and, like, archery towers and shit and a moat around the outside and, you know, the highest walls that I could possibly build. Like, it got to the point where, like, I couldn't build walls any higher because they just wouldn't let me because the elevation was too high. So just playing around with the building and the crafting was a really fun part about it. Some of my friends did actually cool stuff with it that didn't involve, you know, just, you know, being a psycho. One of my friends built, like, a fully functional bridge over a lake, like, just from one end of the lake to the other, just built a bridge that was structurally sound the whole way through. And that was really fucking cool. So you can actually do cool stuff with the game. And we did. I had a really fun time playing it. And it's one of those games that, like, I'm sort of itching. They've been really slow putting out new content for it, and I'm just, like, itching for a reason to go back to it and play some more of it. And my number two game is Resident Evil Village, which this is also, like, sort of a proxy for finally finishing Resident Evil 7 and the Resident Evil 7 DLCs. It took, like, a long time of me being a gamer, but I finally became Resident Evil pilled in 2021.
Congratulations.
These games are fucking nobody told me these games are just, like, unhinged. And I love that.
Resident Evil 6, Chris, like, lifts a fucking car and throws it at someone. It's stupid as hell.
Yeah, it's fucking awesome. And this one is one of the DLCs for Resident Evil 7, by the way, is amazing. You play as a character out in a swamp, kind of like a hermit that lives out in a swamp, and there's a boss battle against an enemy that looks exactly like Swamp Thing. And you, like, get health back by eating bugs, and the guy just doesn't use guns, so you're just using, like, these crafted spears. Anyway, it's really fun. Resident Evil Village was great. I like the level design in that game is honestly, like, pretty fucking immaculate. And the villains are just so well realized. And I'm not just talking about the 8-foot-tall vampire with huge titties. The other villains are also really good. My favorite was Moreau, who's this sad little frog guy. He doesn't want to be there. He hates what he's doing. But he, like, has to do it because, you know, it's sort of out of his hands. And I just wanted to, like, I just wish there was an option that instead of doing a boss fight where I blew him up with grenades, so I could just be like, take him out to a bar and, you know, get him a drink, get his self-confidence back, like, you know, maybe stop being as much of a frog man. But I love this game a lot. I was super, super into it. And then my number one game of the year is, of course, Deathloop, which is, for someone like me, is inevitable. I mean, Dishonored is my favorite video game franchise probably of all time at this point. And so the new game from the Dishonored studio is obviously something that I'm going to be really into. I don't like it quite as much as the Dishonored games, but I think that by introducing the time loop mechanic to an immersive sim, it actually sort of levels up the genre in a really cool way, where, like, the thing that I really like about immersive sims is, like, playing them over and over and over. so you can learn like the ins and outs of each of the levels and all the different ways that you can approach them. And by like integrating the time loop, it makes it so like you don't have to play Deathloop multiple times to do that, because you go back to the same spaces over and over and over to the point where you can just like become like you can be the complete master of these areas. And like every time you head into them, you're like, I know exactly what I'm going to do. You know, there's this group of enemies here. I know how to take them out in the most efficient way possible. I know how to like complete the objectives in the best way possible. All of that like design is just really fucking, was really fucking awesome. And I enjoyed that game a lot. And I, you know, plan to go back to it at some point and, you know, round out some of the achievements and stuff, because I had such a great time with it. But yeah, that's me. Those are my games.
I did have an actual top four.
Yeah.
Pokemon Brilliant Diamond. Still technically haven't finished it, but I am like at the Elite Four, so I just have to like actually go in and beat them. I just have been slacking. So
they're fucking a bunch of bitches.
See, I keep hearing that. Like, it's actually pretty hard, so now I don't know who to believe.
See, everyone told... even my other friends who were playing this game concurrently were like, man, the game was so easy, and then I got to the Elite Four and I got wiped.
See, that's what I keep hearing.
And then I rolled up to the Elite Four and I just crushed them. Like absolutely just dominated the Elite Four. So, you know what? If you're good at the game, you have nothing to be afraid of.
Okay. Yeah, I, like... The fact that this game was outsourced to another studio is, like, just extremely apparent in kind of, like, the everything about it. But also, I still thought it was pretty fun. And, like, even the stuff that I didn't really care for about it, like, I mean, I still had a good time. So, I don't know. I've been pretty transparent about, like, I'll just play any Pokemon game. And this is another Pokemon game. And I had fun. So,
and that's why the next two games are also Pokemon games.
Well, yeah, you know, I didn't think about it that way, but you're right. I also just only play Pokemon games, I guess. New Pokemon Snap was very fun. It got some new content a little while ago that I never finished, but I did, like, start, and I was enjoying it. I mean, like, I like theme park rides, and this is sort of like Theme Park Ride the video game, and I just like all of the environments were so pretty, and like the Pokemon animations were all so charming, and you know, it's just a cute, fun time. And Pokemon Unite, which I know is a horrible predatory MOBA, but goddamn if it isn't fucking fun as hell. And I, you know, I haven't played it as much as I was playing it for a while, but like, it's just really fun. Like, I'll be watching a video and someone will start complaining about Pokemon Unite being horrible and predatory, and they'll have gameplay footage, and I'm like, damn, this makes me want to play Pokemon Unite. which just means I have a problem, but you know, it's fine. My number one game is not even a full finished game, but it is my number one game of the year, and it is Deltarune Chapter 2, because it fucking rules, and I've played it twice since it came out, and I played the first chapter three times this year. Deltarune is just very cool. It's a really interesting, like, it's its own thing, but it's also got, as, like, a meta sequel to, or, like, a spiritual sequel to Undertale. It has, like, characters from Undertale, but, like, sort of remixed or repurposed in different ways, and, I'm just, like, literally frothing at the mouth waiting for the rest of the game to come out, which I know it's going to be years, because they weren't even going to release Chapter 2 on its own. They were just like, Chapter 1 came out as a demo, and then they were going to release the rest of the game whenever it was done, but it was taking longer than expected, and so they released another chapter just to sort of be like, here's what we've been working on. And yeah, I just like the music's good, the art's good, the story's fun. I love Deltarune. Like, I just really can't overstate it enough that I love this game, and I can't wait to see the rest of it.
I will just say, I hope for your sake that this is not your Half-Life 2 chapter episode 2.
I mean, you know, that's fair. That's extremely fair. But I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, well, that's what people said in 2007 about Half-Life 2. But it seems like Toby Fox actually has a good sense for, you know, when he's going to put these games out. So, all right. Well, I think we're gonna wrap ourselves up with TV shows, which is I think only Emily has TV shows to talk about.
Yeah, Alex listed some, so I think we should probably mention them.
Yeah, Alex listed Cowboy Bebop, which I assume is the original Cowboy Bebop. Which he watched this year. I'm going to editorialize and say that he did not mean Cowboy Bebop 2021.
I feel like if he did, he would have indicated.
Probably, yes. Which, you know what? Technically cheating, because that show did not come out this year, but it's a great show, and he watched it for the first time, so, fair enough. Riverdale, The Bad Batch, Hawkeye, and Arcane rounded out his list. So you know what? Fair enough. I watched four of those shows and, you know, still decided I didn't need to make a list.
Riverdale was good. I'm enjoying Arcane. I think by the time we do the next episode of this show, I will be done with it.
Nice.
And I'd be willing to talk about it. I think Arcane is great. I've had a fantastic time with it.
Yeah, I will really make sure to finish it by the time we record next week.
I really liked the first three episodes. I haven't finished it, but I don't think I'm going to at this point. But Emily, do you want to tell us about all the 40 bajillion television shows you watched this year?
I mean,
hey, we're at an hour, and yeah, we're going a little long tonight, but no, you can't talk about all 40 bajillion of them. Okay, I want to go to bed.
First of all, there are 15, not 40 bajillion, and I wasn't going to go into detail about all of them. I couldn't pick is the problem. That's it. I couldn't pick. And so I split them into three subcategories. For live action, I included anything that either like released a new season or started this year. My number five was Riverdale because, I mean, it's Riverdale, best show of the year every year. But even though it isn't my number one because, also it's Riverdale. Kevin Can Fuck Himself. I've talked about the show before. It's like a, half sitcom, half, drama. And it got renewed for a second season, which I'm really excited about. It's really good and really interesting. And I'm just really glad that, it created enough buzz to, because I really thought it was going to be dead in the water at the end of the first season, even though they ended on a really good cliffhanger and I was really excited to find out where it goes. So, I'm excited to see what happens. Chucky, the Child's Play TV show, fucking kicks ass. It's so good. Jean-Luc, please, you have to watch this show. It's so good.
I'll try.
I have only ever seen the Chucky sequels. I've never even seen the first Child's Play movie, but that's okay because anytime that the first movie is relevant to the plot of the TV show, they give little flashbacks or explanation. I feel like it's very, very newcomer friendly, even if it is extremely tied into the lore of all of the Chucky movies that have come out previously, which I think is really interesting as a concept. But yeah, it's the acting is all really good. I really like all the teen characters that they introduced for the TV show, and the music in every episode absolutely whips. Just one of the best, pop music soundtracks of, it's not my best soundtrack for a TV show of the year, but it is, the best licensed music soundtrack for a TV show of the year, in my opinion. It's super fun. It's got some really, good and gruesome kills, and, I knew I was gonna like it, and I just didn't expect to like it as much as I did. Next is Squid Game, because Squid Game, upon close inspection, there are a lot of things, plot-wise about Squid Game that kind of just don't necessarily hold up as well, but like it's such an interesting and like stylistically cool show, and like, I mean, you know, we love a critique of capitalism, and I like that it has renewed interest, or it has driven interest in Korean television to Netflix viewers, so I think that's pretty cool. And then Succession, which is my number one TV soundtrack of the year because the score of the show is fucking incredible. John, we've heard me talk a lot about Succession, but you watched some of the first season, and I would like to know how you felt.
It's good. I'll keep it brief, but I'm looking forward to watching more. It walks the line. It's one of the things that just walks the line so far, at least really nicely, of like characters that you kind of you absolutely despise, but are at the end of the day, like even early on, like, well, not all of them, but a good number of them are like somewhat sympathetic. Like I fucking hate them all. But also,
I hate you, but I love you.
Yeah, it's more that I feel like I empathize with them to a degree. And for, you know, a script to be able to do that is pretty impressive. So I'm enjoying it so far. I'm looking forward to watching more of it. I haven't in a while. In a few days, I've just been focused on trying to clean up some of the last few movies of this year that I've wanted to see. But definitely in the next like week or so, I will get back to watching a bunch of it.
My new animation from 2021 that I enjoyed, Jellystone, was it's a reboot of like the Hanna-Barbera animated universe, and it's just really fun and cute, and it's it was the showrunner for this revival is the creator of Chowder, which is another show that I really enjoyed when I was younger on Cartoon Network.
Yeah, Chowder was great.
Yeah, Chowder was super good. Q-Force, much maligned animated program, adult animated program from Netflix, but it actually is very good, and everyone who thinks it's bad didn't watch it because they saw a trailer that sucked and decided that the whole show sucked on that basis. But actually, I've watched the first season twice now. I don't think it's going to get another season because of how poorly it was received, but I really enjoyed it. Invincible, I mean, I almost forgot that Invincible was this year because it feels like this year has been a million years, but Invincible fucking kicked ass, and I am excited to see what season two brings. Chad and I have talked at length about Centaur World. I feel like it didn't really, I feel like it could have done better on the whole thing, but I also love it a lot. And I don't know, something about the whole, like the end of season one and then a lot of season two, which it ended with the end of season two, just felt like, I don't know, rushed, like Netflix just wanted to kind of like kick it out the door and be done with it. And that's kind of unfortunate, but it's also just really, really fun and weird and interesting. And I'm glad that it exists. And then Arcane, because it's just fucking good. Like, there's no reason that the League of Legends TV show should be so good. And yet it is. It's kind of insane.
Agreed.
Animated shows that didn't start in 2021 but continued. I'm not even gonna really like give any explanations for this. Just Jurassic World, Camp Cretaceous, Summer Camp Island, Tuca and Birdie, Amphibia, and the Owl House.
Owl House is so good. I think I need to watch Amphibia. I've heard a lot of people talk really good about
it. It's really good. I think you would like it. It's a lot more like a lot more low stakes than Owl House, but it's, I mean, it's about like a girl that gets transported to a magical frog world, or it's, I mean, it's not really magical, it's a little magical, but she gets transported to like a frog world and kind of has to find her way back home, and it's about to end this year in 2022. It's in its last season, and it's on like the season mid-season break. So, It'll be done soon, so you'll have like a full complete. It wasn't canceled, I don't think. I think this was like a planned 3-season arc for the show. So
wonderful.
Yeah, it should at some point this year should be all on Disney Plus. So it'll be pretty easy to find.
It's on Disney Plus, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's a Disney show. You just said that.
I was pacing out as I was typing. There is streaming. Kim Cartoon it is.
I was gonna say it'll be on Kim Cartoon.
Do you want my Disney Plus login?
Oh, God, it'd make watching Encanto a lot easier.
I don't
actually like using Kim Cartoon because Malwarebytes is like, dude, why do you keep logging into this? We block shit every time you open this up. And I was like, I know, that's what you're here for. You're my shield so I can watch children's cartoons.
Yeah, I am more than happy to share that with you if it would make the process.
Well, I
want to
get a lot of logins from you and watch all the stuff.
Yeah, look at that. Handed them out like candy.
I don't have the second Matrix movie. I swear to God we did, but we only had the first one. We watched it in 480p.
Yeah.
Wait, you actually watched that in 480p?
Yeah.
That was the DVD.
We ended up watching them on HBO Max, but we did pull out my parents' box set of the first three, and if it weren't
fuck
for
yeah,
the
this guy gets it.
If it weren't for the fact that I had spirited away my parents' DVD/Blu-ray player with me to DC, I would have insisted on watching them in that manner rather than on HBO.
I watched them on HBO Plus or HBO Max.
I mean, so did I, but you got to get the 480p glory of those movies, really. I think it really accentuates the experience. All right,
it's great. It's nostalgic.
I was surprised how well the like effects and graphics in the Matrix sequels held up.
Yeah,
I'm surprised how well they held up in the first one.
Yeah,
well, I haven't rewatched the first one in since I saw it a couple years ago, so I can't quite comment on it. But yeah, like watching the sequels, I definitely expected them to look a lot uglier when it came to like all of the like the machinery and stuff. But no, like it looked really good.
That's what happens when you have a competent VFX team that knows how to light shit and a choreography team that actually does choreography and doesn't just CG all that shit.
Yeah.
So like all the kung fu is like, I mean, obviously they're not doing all of the stunts, but a lot of the kung fu scenes are like actually like kung fu artists doing kung fu and the actors doing it, right? Like that's just like, we lost so much. Like those Matrix sequels got maligned so hard, and then nobody made a movie that's looked that good. Like, well, that's not true. Nobody made a like big budget Hollywood movie that's looked that good since 2003. Maybe with the exception
Speed Racer
of,
come out.
Maybe the exception of Fast Five. Well, okay, but Speed Racer, even though I personally don't like it, it's a different, like, the visual style of that movie is very different from...
Yeah, yeah, it's a cartoon.
It's not
it's
really
a little more
what
stylized.
Yeah, it's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, like, even, like, man, it's so funny to think that, like, the Star Wars prequels were concurrent with those movies. And honestly, like, Revenge of the Sith is one of the better-looking blockbusters of the last 20 years at this point. But that doesn't even hold a candle to the Matrix sequels. Maybe Fast Five. Fast Five gets kind of close. But anyway, I digress. We will end the episode there. We'll be back next week to do our big end-of-the-year comics show. We will have Alex back for that one. And if we don't, we'll probably postpone it because that is when we'll want the full
crew. If we don't, we'll cry.
Yeah, I'll also cry, but...
I said we'll cry. We will collectively cry.
Exactly. Well, collective cry, like in Midsummer.
Yeah, that it's going to be exactly like Midsummer.
Exactly like that, yeah. I want to be the main character. I want to be the one, like, mouth open.
Okay.
Just, like, losing my shit on my knees.
Well, you are
anyway.
The host.
Exactly. Anyway, that's going to do it. We will be back next week, like I said. In the meantime, you can follow us at Comics Podcast on, you know, Twitter and Facebook and all that good shit. Do we want to do plugs?
Yeah, why not?
Do your plugs. Chad, plug your stuff.
You can find me on Twitter at AnonymBand. You can find my music on Spotify now. If you type in Anonym, I-N-O-N-U-M. I have an EP and an album. Listen to the EP. It's the new one, and it sounds the best. If you want my stories, you can go to anonym.wordpress.com. I actually put a top 10 albums up, so you heard my top five. You can look at the bottom five. It's fun. I don't know. And then I got some books on Amazon. You can find those too if you type in Chad Waller. They are The Ninth Life, Dreamscape, and Toyland. I got a couple of things open today that I'm editing. That might be the next big book that goes on Amazon. Not sure which one it'll be yet.
Emily?
You can find me on the Bird website at Impandanata. You can find my podcasts, Imagine Me in Utsuna, at UtsunaCast, Fresh Podcast Market, at Fresh Pod Market, and I produce the podcasts Big Steppy, Backseat Drawing, and Loser Like Me.
Wow, you even plugged the ones that you produce. Nice.
I sure did.
I'm at Mountain Dew Liker on Twitter, and we will see you next week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.